Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century on Blue Ridge Public Radio. I'm Dr. Marcia Mount Shoup.
And I'm Coach John Shoup.
John's coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
And Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
And we're glad you've joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond the sound bites and highlight reels.
So today we're going to get to spend some time with an old friend of ours, Judge Bob Orr.
Bob Orr is a former Supreme Court Justice here in the state of North Carolina. And Bob's been a friend of ours since 2010 when we got introduced to one another while we were trying to deal with the scandal at UNC's with regards to the football team.
So the way that I met Bob was that I'd started writing a blog series when we discovered that the institution of the University of North Carolina was not addressing the NCAA investigation the way we had thought, and that players were really the casualties. And so I started writing a blog series called Calling Audibles on my website, and I wrote one about a player named Devin Ramsey. Bob Orr contacted me through my website after that because he had gotten involved with Devin and Devin's mom, Sharon Lee, about this case. And really, Bob became one of our closest friends through that time. And there aren't many people that I can say I respect as much as I respect Bob Orr.
Well, through the case with Devin Ramsey, when Devin really needed an advocate, Bob was the one person in the Carolina community that really stepped up to advocate for Devin and to help Devin ultimately regain his eligibility. One of the things that I admire about Bob is that Bob is a UNC Chapel Hill grad. Bob loves UNC Chapel Hill. In the work that he does is he calls UNC to be all that it can be. He stands up to his alma mater in ways that other Chapel Hillians, frankly, haven't been able to
Have been unwilling to, yeah. Bob is the picture of moral courage, really, I think, because he really has been able to stand outside the kind of institutional idolatry that has made a whole community kind of turn the other way and look the other way and not really want to deal with the systemic issues. He's also a bulldog. He won't let go of an issue, and he's not afraid to take care of issues in the legal arena with a behemoth like UNC or the NCAA. And so that he has been a real model for us, because one of the things I'll say about how this whole investigation affected us is that for a long, long time, football was a family thing for us that affected our family, and it expanded our family. We had lots of friends, and because you're away from family, you don't get to spend holidays with family. Football becomes your family. And so when something happened, it was like, well, this is affecting our family. And it was at UNC that we really realized that this wasn't just about our family. It wasn't just about our lives. It was about an unjust system that we were waking up to. And Bob has really been a mentor to us in that. We've grieved together because for him, it had been a source of joy, just like it had been for us. And I think Bob is one of the people that I would say has been with us as we've made this shift away from, well, this is John's livelihood, this is what our family does, toward, you know, we are advocates for the transformation of a system that affects not just our family, but whole classes and races of people in a way that creates disadvantage that we're unwilling to just say is acceptable. Because the North Carolina NCAA saga
right.
is so epic. And you are there is no one in this state, or I would even go on to say in this country, that can speak with more authority and more firsthand information about the scope of this whole thing than Judge Bob Orr. I would say that. So I'm going to challenge you today. You get on an elevator with somebody, and they recognize that they are on the elevator with Judge Bob Orr, and you've got 3 minutes, and they say, "What happened at the University of North Carolina with the NCAA? What was that all about? What's your elevator speech?"
Well, lawyers can't do anything in 3 minutes, but I'll try. I mean, UNC's issues began with what appeared to be an impermissible benefit involving an agent and a couple of players. And so the university said, "Oh, well, we're going to open this up and check all the things going on." And lo and behold, the tip of the iceberg is discovered that there are some players perhaps getting too much help from one particular tutor. And from that point in 2010, in which a number of players were suspended from competition by the university and by the NCAA, over the course of the next 5 years, 6 years, this incredible unraveling of a system of, I would submit, fraudulent courses. I think UNC apologists would describe them as easy courses, and therein lies one of the great issues in it. But what was ultimately discovered was that hundreds, maybe even several thousand athletes over 15 years, 18 years, were taking classes and getting credits that under any normal circumstance shouldn't have happened or wouldn't have happened. And so the NCAA came in after UNC, and UNC did what everybody ought to do, lawyer up with $1,000-an-hour lawyers, you know, from California and New York, and you fight everybody tooth and nail, and you beat them into submission through the lawyers and the money that you're pouring into it. And in the end, although UNC certainly got a black eye out of this, no punishment was forthcoming for the university out of the sort of aggregate athletic scandal. And what the real tragedy of it to me is that so many kids got shortchanged on their education, and all the people who were punished in the process, from the players to the coaches to athletic counselors, were really the ones who shouldn't have been punished, and the people that I think were ultimately responsible dodged it.
Well done.
Excellent. Well done. Which leads me to the point, I was one of those people in 2010 that did not dodge it.
Right.
I was a football coach at the University of North Carolina, and we met in 2010. And it was, I think, 15 players that were suspended of the football team were suspended for academic fraud, and I think up to 18 players received some sort of suspension or punishment overall. And so when people say there were no, UNC got off scot-free, there were no casualties, I do take great exception to that, because an entire football staff and 18 young men got penalized quite severely. I lost my job. But my question is, in 2010, some of the most minuscule, I mean minimal, academic infractions, i.e., Johnny White, I believe, a player for ours, had to write a check for $7.50.
An Asheville High School graduate, I might add. Yeah.
That's
and
right.
He missed some practice and game time
To cover for an improper tutor. Whether it was improper or not is absolutely, well, mind-boggling to me. But what happened from 2010 to fast forward to 2018 that the basketball team that was chin deep in what the football team might have been knee deep in got off completely scot-free. And I'm trying to figure out how Dick Bedore was the athletic director while I was coaching football there, and it seemed to me that he just kind of turned over and gave the NCAA whatever they needed, whereas Bubba Cunningham is the athletic director who fired our entire football staff and really fought it tooth and nail.
Yeah, I think at some point in that continuum, as the scandal unraveled, and it's a very interesting set of circumstances on how it unraveled. UNC made a calculated decision that we are going to go all in to fight it on technical, legal, or rule interpretation grounds. And candidly, I think the NCAA, which is the epitome of hypocrisy in all things athletic, decided we're going down a road that we don't really as an organization want to go down, and that's that we are somehow accountable for our member institutions playing fast and loose with academics in order to keep players eligible. And so you had on the one hand UNC saying, well, we're not going to let the NCAA lay it to us, and the NCAA, in my opinion, saying, well, you know, we probably ought to punish them, but then that means we have some responsibility in all of this, and we're not willing to accept that responsibility, which is ironic because the NCAA is chest deep in academics from high school forward involving these players. But, and this is sort of the nuanced issue. If you're simply talking about easy courses, I would agree with UNC and ultimately the NCAA that is not an NCAA area of concern. If a university wants to put out garbage courses, you know, that's the university and the people who Right. fund the university and Mm-hmm. and accredit the university. That's their bailiwick. On the other hand, if the courses are fraudulent, you know, whether it's, you know, Trump University or, right. or whomever, if you're putting out fraudulent courses, then I think clearly the NCAA would have jurisdiction to punish a school, and the school should be held liable for literally providing, you know, these shadow courses.
Is there a legal definition of fraudulent versus crummy?
Well, not in the context of this particular issue. Now, there may be involving bogus online courses somewhere around the country, but in this context, what UNC circled the wagons on was, okay, we admit these are really crummy courses. They're, you know, they're easy, but look, everybody has certain number of easy courses. We've all taken slide courses. We've all had that guaranteed A professor. That's not a violation. I would submit that if you really peel the onion back, most of the courses at issue at UNC were fraudulent courses by any legitimate academic standard. And I use one example, and y'all can cut me off if I'm rambling on too much about this particular point, but Mike McAdoo was a defensive end. He wasn't one of your position players, but Mike...
We were there at the same time.
Yeah, you were there at the same time. Mike was one of two players who the NCAA charged with academic fraud, and that was based on him getting too much help from a university tutor for a Swahili 403 class, which was an upper level class. What nobody knew in 2010, frankly, didn't come out until maybe 2013 or 14, was that Swahili 403 was taught by one university professor, Dr. Alphonse Mutima, and he taught it fall semester. Everybody went to class. Everybody had a 20-page paper in Swahili upon which their grade was based. Mike McAdoo in 2009 was in a Swahili 403 class, second semester summer school, in which the actual professor, Professor Mutima, had no clue what was going on. And so he worked with a tutor, did a 20-page cut-and-paste paper in English, and got his grade through the AFAM department. And that's what his entire college football career was terminated for, was because he got too much help from this tutor, when in reality the class he was taking was a fraudulent class. The grade roll was actually forged. And, I mean, there's public acknowledgement by university officials that Professor Mutima was contacted and says, we want your syllabus for this second semester class. He said, I don't know anything about a second semester class. I didn't teach it. He said, well, your name's on the grade roll. And he says, well, if my name's on the grade roll, then it was forged. And, you know, the university knew this in 2010, but it doesn't become public until Mike McAdoo's career is ruined. And, you know, the whole process of the investigation and everything is way, way down the road.
Yes. So I look back on all of that time when all of this was, there was this undercurrent happening that we didn't know about. I mean, there was so much silence and secrecy around everything when we were there. We did not know. And really when things opened up for us was at Thanksgiving with Devin Ramsey, when finally I was like, what's going on, Devin? You know, and that's kind of how we met, right, was through Devin's situation. But as I listen to you describe how this all unfolded, and I think about the timing of the way Butch Davis was let go, and then the way that season unfolded, and then the rest of the coaches were let go, this is all just conjecture on my part, a gut feeling. There was clear evidence to the higher-ups at the university that this was bigger than some improper benefits and this tutor.
Right.
And so it's going to touch the academic reputation of the university. We have to have a red herring. Fire Butch Davis.
Yeah.
Fire the coaches. And then they did it. It did buy them some time. And your average person, when you talk about the NCAA investigation, they don't even remember the part that,
right,
when things started. And John's question at the beginning was, the NCAA was so worried about Johnny White's $7 and Devin Ramsey's one sentence. And then through the course of how this unfolded, yeah, now they don't, that's not their issue. They don't really care about academic integrity. They don't really, that's not their issue. To me, there's more going on there than just, like you, the way you put it was, the NCAA started to look at, I don't think we want to go down this road. They don't want to go down the road of the basketball team is our cash cow. Why would we kill it?
Money's throughout this. And one of the things that a close friend of mine who was high up in the university said early on is, you know, the first thing we have to do, Bob, is protect the institution. And I think that's what, in a lot of ways, this was all about. But I want to say this on behalf of Coach Davis, is for those who actually remember how it hit, the fall of, actually, late summer 2010
August
was when the impermissible benefits, the agent deal,
hit. Oh, that was July,
but Coach Davis was kept on. you know, for, you know, through the season into the next year. And we were into almost the beginning of the 2011 season, as I recall.
And then
one thing happened, and that was Mike McAdoo, who had been held permanently ineligible for getting too much help from the tutor, had hired attorneys, they had filed a lawsuit, and they had attached the copy of his paper that was at issue. And the clever NC State techies had gone online and pulled it up and were claiming that it was
plagiarized.
But it was the first time that Professor Julius Nangora's name had surfaced in all of this. And he was the supposed professor on the paper. And ironically, within, I would say, 3 weeks of Professor Nangora's name surfacing in the media, Butch Davis was fired.
Yes.
You know, and it was like, what? Now you've waited a year, and then, you know, why is this happening? And I'm convinced, I have no proof whatsoever, but I am personally convinced that there were folks in the power structure at UNC who, when Nangora's name surfaced, said, you know, we got a real problem if we don't put it, if we don't put the skids to this right now. And the only thing that's going to get the media off our backs is to fire Butch Davis.
So it was literally, we had just gotten back from vacation. Butch always had an event at the start of the season where all the coaches came. We were supposed to go to dinner at the chancellor's house. And I remember I ran into Holden Thorpe's wife, Patty, at the store and was like, well, we'll see you
Holden Thorpe
soon.
Was the chancellor.
Yeah. We'll see you soon. And I thought she acted weird. And then we got this phone call that the dinner was canceled all of a sudden. Weird.
Yeah.
Thought, got a sinking feeling. Then Butch had an event where we were all invited to come over to the facility. And we were waiting for him in the team film room. Remember, we were all sitting there. And we were there. It was for the beginning of the season. And all the coaches and their families were there. And Butch walked in with this look on his face. Remember?
I remember.
And his wife was with him, Tammy. And you could tell she had been crying.
Yeah.
And he walked in and said, I've just been relieved of my duties as the coach of the University of North Carolina. I mean, that's how we found out.
Yeah.
We were there for an event. And so I...
8 days before training camp started.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I agree with you that something triggered this decision. It wasn't anything that they said it was in the media,
right.
But it was that... the academic integrity of the university was beginning to be in question. And I don't know if it was just when you say Nangora's name was in the media now, are you suggesting that that people knew the whole fake classes thing is going to come to light, or just he's one of our faculty members and this is going to get ugly?
You know, the system of... And Julius Nangora was the chair of the African
right.
Studies department. And there is no question. I mean, once, you know, 3 years down the road, when after the various investigatory commissions and reports came out, I mean, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of classes that he signed off on. In which there were no professors involved, there were no classes involved. Maybe the kids, you know, did a paper and mm-hmm. turned it in. But, you know, it was one of those deals where clearly some people within the university power structure knew that this system was going on. And that if the media kept digging and digging and asking questions and putting out public records requests, that eventually what did come out would come out. And so the hope was, I am convinced, we'll cut it off at the pass. The only way you cut it off at the pass is to fire Butch Davis. That'll get the NNO, the News and Observer, which was sort of, you know, hammering them on this. That'll get them off our backs, and we can put this to bed. Now, it didn't turn out that way, but I don't have any doubt.
Fast forward a little bit, and I don't know if we fast forward all the way to fall of 2017, but we fast forward some. I'm fired. Butch Davis is fired. We're a few years removed from that football staff and team being there.
Right.
And there's a new athletic director, Bubba Cunningham. Bubba is the one that fired our entire staff. And it seems to me that there's also a new tactic of, let's fight the NCAA, but something more than just a changing of the guard at UNC happened. And I wonder if you could walk us through how the NCAA went from just doggedly pursuing these academic violations with tutors that were the most innocuous of instances to, that's not our business. Frankly, I was on the inside when it was all about their business, and I'm trying to figure out all of a sudden why it's not now.
Well, if you look at the course of the scandal from 2010 when it first hit up to the present, there was this ever-increasing question about these bogus classes. And again, you know, the issue is the UNC apologist will say, well, they weren't bogus, they were easy classes. But the NCAA is happy to hammer a Mike McAdoo, a Devin Ramsey, a Johnny White, you know, the young woman who's the tutor.
Jennifer.
I mean, that's easy pickings, you know, because those, most of them don't have lawyers. They're up against the NCAA. The university's laying in with the NCAA because they have a vested interest in keeping them happy. So that's easy pickings. But all of a sudden, over the course of 2, 3, 4 years, lawsuits were filed. These commissions and reports came out. And some people said this is the worst academic scandal in the history of college sports. And so all of a sudden, the NCAA brand, you know, whether it's basketball or UNC or just the NCAA generally, March Madness, their copyrighted trademark that's worth a bazillion dollars. It's like, you know, we're having to show some sort of accountability academically for what's going on. And of course, they all recognize that these kinds of problems of one kind or another are happening at other schools. I mean, Michigan State had, or was it Michigan? I think it was Michigan that had, mm-hmm. I don't want to defame one or the other, but, you know.
They're probably both doing it.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. But, you know, there was this question being raised about the NCAA's responsibility to make sure this doesn't happen. Because who's getting shortchanged, really? It's the kids taking the garbage classes.
Sure.
And so the NCAA had to make a decision. You know, how do we pivot from hammering the kids for academic fraud to this, you know, Pontius Pilate, I'm washing my hands. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have any responsibility. If UNC wants to put out lousy classes, that's UNC's business, not ours. And there was a rule change. I'm not exactly sure, but it was a couple of years ago. But the whole UNC issue was way down the road. And I think that the NCAA power structure said, you know, we need to change this rule, regardless what we do with UNC. We need to make a slight pivot here so that we can't be held accountable for the qualitative standards at all the universities within the NCAA network. So, you know, I mean, it was clearly a self-serving decision, which in the bottom line is, we got no problem punishing the kids, but we don't want to punish our cash cows, the various mm-hmm. universities that make up our membership.
And so when that rule pivoted and the NCAA said, it's not our business, then North Carolina had the wherewithal to fight back while they were going to take the punches of, we allowed to have crummy courses,
yeah.
There's not going to be any penalties or anything. We just had crummy courses, and we're sorry about that.
That's right. There's got to be a football analogy here somehow. It's like, you know, there's a window between the cornerback and the safety, and your job's to make sure the receiver and the yep. quarterback are, you know, go right through that narrow mm-hmm. alley, so to speak. And that's exactly what the NCAA rule change gave UNC and its lawyers.
Yes, it did.
you know, a window of opportunity to come in.
To thread the needle.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the ironies, though, is all of this was done behind closed doors. And it still irks me that a state university, can't say necessarily a private school, but I think you could make a good argument that a state university has an obligation, if these kinds of decision-making processes are going to go forward and happen, then the public has a right to see what happens,
mm-hmm.
Because those are our tax dollars here in North Carolina that go to the university.
You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @ShoopsGoingDeep.